Hello, MX fans. Thanks for clicking in and listening to this edition of the RacerX Canada podcast, brought to you by Shift Racing Canada. Check out shiftracing.ca to see the brand new for chicks only Vixen gear. Shift has also signed Sarah Whitmore for the 08 season, and you can see her at a WMA podium near you sometime this summer. Love that women's racing. They always go bar to bar. I guess we're available on iTunes now as well, Jason Griffiths tells me. So if you go to iTunes podcast, you can subscribe to this very exciting podcast and have it downloadable on your iPod every week. This week, I have one of my favorite riders on, the always accessible, always plugged in, David Villeman, otherwise known as DV12.com, his favorite and popular website. I was on this guy's team for 3 years, and he gave me a good share of laughs, some intentional, some unintentional. Like the time that Chad Reed thought the Yamaha Supercross test track was a little dry and decided to water it a lot. DV got out there and slopped around in the mud before pulling into the pits and absolutely losing it. I believe there was even a helmet thrown somewhere in there. We put the helmet up on a fence link in honor of his temper tantrum that day, and we all had a pretty good laugh at it at DV's expense. If there's one thing he can do, it's laugh at himself. He's never shy with an opinion and one of the most talented riders out there. DV got back on the factory team this year when Suzuki picked him up, and it's really unfortunate that he's still battling injuries, as you'll soon hear. Think about this. When you think of the best Supercross riders of all time, the names Carmichael, McGrath, Reed will always come up. Well, this guy, DV12, has beaten all of them straight up at one point or another. This guy has won 125, 250 GPs, AMA Nationals, AMA Supercrosses, and he should always be talked about the best riders of all time. He's very underrated, and again, super, super talented. I've seen him just fool around at the Yamaha test track doing stoppies and rolling up jumps and rolling down jumps and jumping from one lane to another. And the guy has a ton of talent. Very creative. He entertains us on the internet. He entertains us during opening ceremonies, in the pits, and even when he's eating a Kit Kat. I think he will entertain you as well. So sit back and let the internet grab a hold of you and slowly caress your eardrums to the soothing sounds of the RacerX Canada podcast. All made possible by Shift Racing and the brand new Vixen gear.
Hey, this is Tim Ferry, Monster Energy Kawasaki rider, and you're listening to a podcast. I have no idea what a podcast is, but you're listening to one right now.
DV12.
Yes.
What's going on?
No, I'm not. Just playing poker, actually.
Sounds like it. Yeah, sounds like you got a little casino going on in the background.
Yeah, a little house game with some friends.
So, your season, rough start so far, huh?
Yeah, rough start and actually rough finish of the outdoors last year, too. You know, actually, since Millville, it was August 12, 2007, it hasn't been super for me. You know, it took me a while to get back from that crash, and then I hurt my thumb at the end of October. It took me a while to get back on the bike after that. No, it's been rough. You know, the last 6 months have been pretty difficult for me.
Not many people know that you're actually battling some pretty good injuries. Your thumb's still bugging you. Your knee got dislocated in San Francisco. So let's start with the knee. How's the knee?
The knee is good. It was painful this weekend, but I still managed to race, and I wasn't 100%, that's for sure, but, you know, I gave it a try. It's actually pretty swollen today, and actually yesterday and today, but I'm not going to give it a try again in San Diego and see how it works, and injuries are part of the game, you know, and I think a lot of people ride with injuries that we don't know, you know, some don't want other people to know they're injured, but I've always been pretty open about my injuries, you know, but it's part of the sport, and we have to deal with it.
Yeah, I know. Some people are pretty quiet about it. Like, it's not football where you can target somebody's weak spot, you know what I mean? Nobody's going to go for your knee out on the track, so it really doesn't matter that you tell people your knee is out.
Yeah, there's, you know, there's people that, you know, we know they were sick like 3 months later, you know, so for me, I don't think that's it's really important. I'm not in a championship hunt, and even when I was, and I actually dislocated my knee, you know, too, when I was leading the championship, and I went back to France, got it fixed, and raced Anaheim 2 and got second, so, and people knew I went, so I wasn't, I don't think it's good to hide stuff, you know. I don't think that's a weakness to, that people knows, you know, that you hurt. We have a saying, like, a French thing that says, a hurt tiger is a stronger tiger, you know, so sometimes injury makes you stronger.
Yeah, we don't really have much for Canadian sayings that way, but I'll go with that. Is your thumb still bugging you?
Yeah, thumb still bothers me, but...
Jeez. That's like, what, 3 months now?
Yeah, it was actually October 30th. I got it. So it's, 3 months now. So, and thumb injuries, you know, it was a sprained thumb and stretched a couple of ligaments. You know, I took a month off, but it's still bothering me. But everybody that held a thumb before, they can relate, you know, because even Nick last year broke his thumb and it took a while for him to get back into racing. And everybody thinks, oh, it's only a little finger, but actually it's... It does a lot on the bike, you know. There's a lot of impact on the thumb.
So what kind of program are you on now, like with the knee and the thumb? Are you riding during the week, or are you strictly showing up at the races now?
Yeah, I actually rode Friday before Anaheim, but I haven't rode yet. We're Monday night, and I don't know if I'm going to ride tomorrow. I'm going to wait. My knee is actually more swollen now than before the race. I think, like, racing kind of made it swollen a little more, so... I have to wait, and I'm going to do some training and try to get a couple of days of riding before San Diego.
Is there a point now where you, I mean, what are you in the points, 12th, I think, in the points?
I'm not really sure, maybe even 15th.
Yeah, is there a point where you pull the plug on Supercross and get 100% for outdoors, or do you just soldier on through the Supercross?
I'm not really sure. There's people that would do it. For me, I like racing, and... I feel like I have to be out there and try to do my best, you know. But, you know, it's good for testing, too, in race condition, and we can maybe see what we can test the bike and see if we can improve. But, yeah, it could be easy for me to take a few weeks off and just get it 100% and come back because I'm not in the points. But I take a race per race and try to go out there for my sponsors and try to... make it better while racing, you know.
No, that's a tough position to be in.
Yeah, for me, the next step is to be, I want to be in the top nine, you know, like to do races in the top nine and try to ride good. And I think even a little hurt like this, I have the potential to do it. You know, I just, it seems like nothing is really clicking the right way. But, you know, I want to turn it around and do better. So.
Well, on a more positive note, how's the new bike with the EFI?
Yeah, the new bike is really good. You know, we got a late start because on testing and stuff, especially me because I was hurt. But EFI is pretty new for the riders and for the team. You know, I think they're doing a good job. And we had some Japanese testing a couple of weeks ago, and we made a good improvement. It was we had a couple of issues in Phoenix for some reason, and but the week after that we fixed everything. We tested one day, we had some great results the Tuesday after Phoenix. It's good, you know. It's what I'm trying to do is to give the best indication I can to the guys, you know. And I'm actually relating what I would change on the carburetor to make the bike better, and those guys can relate and say, oh, we're going to change this and this, you know, because that would be actually the same thing. It's really interesting, and I like when we make progress, you know. So, and I think we, engine-wise, we made good progress the last few weeks, especially injection and power delivery. I think Mike is... happy with the bike, and you know I'm happy with the bike. I just need, as far as my concern, I just need to be healthy and ride better. You know? So.
Now I was telling Tony Berluti, because I'm friends with him, that you're, you know, a really good tester. You know what the bike's doing underneath you. Have you got a sense that the Suzuki guys, they know what you're talking about? Are they impressed with your testing abilities?
They don't really say if I'm good or not, but. Every time I say something, I think we are on the same page, you know. And
yeah.
They're doing testing in Japan, and what I say here, it's really close or really similar from what they told me, you know. So that's cool, you know.
Yeah.
I think the other guys, they say they don't see the difference, or you know. And I actually say exactly what the Japanese riders say or what it should do, you know. So it's everything. Everybody think I'm a special rider or something, and I need a special setup. But I try to have the most neutral setup possible. So that's what I'm trying to do. I want the bike to have a good power delivery, and also I like it to be clean. So we work on all type of things, and they have a lot of things to try too. You know, sometimes they don't really know it's brand new, so we have to try it to see if it's good or not. So I'm trying my best in testing, and I like it. So sometimes it's good. The days are really long, you know. But,
yeah.
It's okay. I like doing it, and I like when the bike is better. That helps all the team. That helps Mike too, and so that's good.
How's it working with Roger DeCosta and Mike Alessi? That's two brand new people for you, and two people that have, you know, quite a bit different careers. One's an older retired GP guy. One's a hot new kid coming up. What's that like?
It's really different. I don't really work with Mike. You know, I just kind of I hear what he says about the bike and what he's doing and stuff. So they have their own training program and they do their own thing. You know, he's new on the 450. He's learning Supercross. I don't think he's a great test rider, but we don't really need him to be, you know. So yeah. I think the team needs to provide him with a bike he's comfortable with so he can get the best results he can. And, you know, he has been getting great starts and running good. He's in the top five in Supercross, which a lot of people, I don't think, expected it from him, you know, because he had actually a pretty bad season last year in Supercross in the lights. So I think when I first saw him ride, actually, I was pretty impressed with his progress, you know. So I think he's on the right path, you know, and he's running really well. As far as Roger, I didn't really know him. You know, I talked a few times before I signed my deal, and I'm pretty impressed about his knowledge in technology and in the mechanical part of it. You know, it's more than a team manager or a former world champion, you know. He can actually work machine and work a lathe and a lot of things and make actually parts. And he has, like I said, he has a lot of knowledge on technology and geometry of the bike and engine. And, you know, I think it's a great asset to have.
I really wish you wouldn't have got hurt. I mean, I'm sure you wish you wouldn't have got hurt at Phoenix last year, also. But you know, a little bit of unknown out there is just how fast you were really going at the world rounds, and then Anaheim won last year. You came from almost dead last to I think seventh, and you were charging pretty good. So really, it's too bad you got hurt at Phoenix. So you need to get healthy.
Yeah, that's really important for me, and just to get my confidence back. Last year I was running lap times in practice with Ricky and James, and then I got hurt in Phoenix. But you know, it's the past, and I learned from my mistakes, and you know, and I just hope I could actually show my potential. You know,
yeah.
I don't think I have the potential to win or to be in the podium, but I have the potential to, as far as today, to do way better than what I'm doing.
Anybody from Suzuki getting on you a little bit or giving you some pressure, or how's that going?
No, I don't really have pressure, you know, and I think they all want me to ride at my best, you know, but, you know, I'm trying, and, you know, I could stay home for a month or so and chill with my knee, you know, and get a paycheck, but, you know, I'm trying my best to get back. You know, I flew to France. I knew exactly what I had in my knee and to get it fixed. You know, and because I wanted to race on M3, even if I was hurt, I think they see I'm trying my best to ride and to get over my injuries and doing some sacrifices, you know, to be there. Like I said, it's not clicking the right way since, you know, the last 6 months. But you know, I keep trying, and the season is still long, and you know, I can I'm gonna take it race per race and try to do better.
You know, you actually had a two-year deal with MDK. You really should be on MDK Honda this year, but they let you out of your deal to sign with Suzuki, which is really good. What are your memories of MDK?
MDK was a great experience for me. You know, after my Texas disaster, I went to actually Motor World, and they put me on the 450 program in the lights team to do nationals, and I did pretty good. And it was a good chance to go with to ride with good bike for the MDK. You know, the Honda is a good bike, stock, and we had a good engine from MDK and suspension from MG3. So the bike itself was actually pretty good. And I love the guys there. You know, they always go there and every week, and I spend at least 30 minutes in the truck, you know, talking to Lamson and Nick and all those guys, you know. And you know, even the truck driver, you know, I think he's the best cook in the pits.
He's better than Pat Mears?
Actually, Pat Mears was actually really good at Yamaha.
He stepped up his game a little bit near the end.
Yeah, I think it was we had a great time last year. You know, we had a lot of fun, and I was pretty much alone pretty much all year long because Nick was hurt. He hurt his thumb, and then he got a concussion, and we spent a lot of time together, and you know, it was a great year last year. And But you know, I had this opportunity, and the guy MDK Mark Kwame, the owner, actually knew what it was, you know, like, and it did not work out as far as today the way I wanted, but back in the day, back in June or something, that was really exciting to be back in the factory, have a great team, a great bike, a good supercross track to train on, you know. And
you're making a lot more cash too.
You know, I'm the money wasn't a big deal. You know, I made decent money last year, and yeah, I had more money to go there. But the thing is, what I wanted is just to have one more try in the factory team. You know, I knew what it was, and but like I said, it's not working the way I wanted. But it was cool for Mark Kwame to let me go. So
I know.
I still have a great relationship with those guys. So you know, they're still all my friend, and we always joke on the weekend all the time. So.
Yeah, I wrote in my column last year how cool I thought those guys were. You walked over there, and you know, I mean, you and Nick Way are pretty two high profile riders, but man, everybody was really cool, relaxed. You know, nobody was under stress or yelling or anything like that. At least that I could see. It was a real cool, laid back team. I liked the atmosphere around there.
Yeah, it was great. Seriously, I've really nothing bad to say about it.
Yeah,
you know? That was a cool experience, and. And I'm sure I might even be involved with MDK in the future.
Yeah.
We never know.
Briefly touched on your Buku Honda disaster. And, you know, you quit that team about halfway through the Supercross rounds, or you mutually agreed to that it wasn't working out. How close were you to hanging it up after that? I mean, I talked to you, and you were talking about maybe doing something with KTM and being a manager, a rider coach. How close were you to really quitting?
Really close, you know, because I was talking to KTM, and actually that's the time that Brooks was leaving, you know. I was close to Mike Alessi. I was giving important Supercross, so I was talking to them to be involved in the team, you know, somehow. You know, I did not prove anything in Supercross. I had a terrible Supercross season. After a while, I got I wanted to ride, and this thing with KTM was for the following year, and I would have to ride a 450 Supercross or 450 Outdoor the following year with a new bike. It was a lot of question marks on the KTM side. So I did not have really like a position that there was for me at that time. You know, I would have had to wait for a while. And so, you know, I got in touch with Keith McCarty, and I got a bike from Yamaha and start riding again, and I got some gear from Nofia, and we made a deal with Motor World to go to the races, and you know, that was it. I was on, you know, like a few weeks before Hangtown to go race again, and I was happy about it, and it turned out it was good. You know, I got fourth the first two races, and it was a little more difficult towards the end, but you know, it helped me to get a ride at MDK, which was good.
That's crazy. 2 years.
Yeah, I was ready to actually quit. You know, I wasn't the Motor World Yamaha thing was exciting, and it was actually pretty much no money, you know.
Yeah.
Pretty much riding for a little salary at no fear, and with expenses to go to the races, and without paying anything, you know, having fun doing it outdoors, what I did. But if I would have had an offer to quit and to have like a cool position somewhere with a decent salary, I would have taken it.
Really? Jeez. And now look, 2 years later, you're on our factory team, and, you know, the future's looking good for you. Funny how that
is.
It's
crazy because, you know, it shows you how, you know, like little things, you know, I made bad decision to go and go to that team in Texas. I didn't know at the time, but at that time it was really appealing. I had a lot of money to go race only 32 races, you know, 2 seasons of Supercross.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, my plan was to seriously to race those 2 years. And today I would have thought I would be like the manager of the team, basically.
Huh.
You know, it did not work out. And I did my thing. They did their thing. They have some new stuff they're doing now, and I'm doing some stuff. So, you know, we both sides learned about the experience. You know, looking back, I think both sides could have done a better job and would have better communication. Maybe it would have been better, but, you know, it is what it is, and both sides learned from it and lived, actually.
You probably won't be doing any more reality shows in your life, though, huh?
Well, actually, I think I'm a great character for a reality show. I don't do politics.
If
I did, maybe it would have been better for me.
Now, in 2002, you know, you were beating Ricky. You were leading the Supercross series until, we all know, you hurt your shoulder in a photo shoot, and it's unfortunate. When you look back to that, and you think to yourself now, what's missing? What's different for you? What can't you do anymore that you could do back then? I mean, is it just a matter of Ricky got way better and James raised the level up?
Like about the level from...
Yeah, like why can't you go and you know, last season, why couldn't you go out and beat Ricky? You've beaten him before. What happened?
I think a lot of things happened, you know, the two-stroke, four-stroke, first of all. I thought I was like, I don't actually, to tell you the truth, I don't really like four strokes supercross, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I still wish we all had two strokes, you know. I'm not really a fan of, I'm old school, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like Windham and Ferry, they adapt on four stroke, you know. For me, I had a little tough time to adapt, especially in supercross. I think everybody improved, and like everybody got like practice tracks and big outdoor track at their house, and me, I just stayed in California, and I think at one point I was pretty much by myself, you know. At the end of 02, I should have invested in somewhere to get my own track and all of this, you know.
Yeah.
And staying in California like burned me out a little bit, and I did not improve because I was running the same tracks and riding the same test track all the time. And, you know, and I showed some good some speed, like from 02 to, you know, 07. You know, I had podiums in 03, 04, not in 05, not in 06, but I was sometimes pretty close. But I think when I was making a lot of money, like in the early 2000s, I did not have somebody telling me what to do, or, you know, I did not have a Bob Moore for Chad Reed, you know, back in the day, telling him what to do, and he bought a house in Florida quick and built tracks and stuff like that.
Yeah, he actually just showed up at Ferry's in a motorhome and said, hey, Bob Moore told me I can ride here with you at your track.
Yeah, so, you know, like, and then three seasons later, I have an opportunity to go in Texas, and, you know, and then that's it. You know, then I lost a lot of grounds there, and I came back in 07 with MDK, with GC and Supercross season finishing sixth, but, you know, I was off the pace to be on the podium, really.
Yeah.
You know, I was like a top six, seven guy, you know. So that's, I think at one point in my career, I didn't have the entourage to tell me, hey, you should buy a house somewhere and build a track. And, you know, I think that was a big problem in my career.
You needed a man friend to, like, be around you.
No, it wasn't a man friend. I think I didn't have people around me just driving me or giving me advice. And, you know, I grew up in a really, like, in a modest family. Like, we didn't have a lot of money. When I made my first million the first year I was here, we were scared. You know, like, we didn't really want to do with our money. We kept it, and we didn't really invest. We were scared to buy houses or buy a truck, or, you know, because we never had that much money before. And actually, we had nobody to tell us what to do.
Yeah.
And we were scared about people because we were not trusting anybody, you know.
Yeah, you're in a strange land.
You know, we were not in our country. It was difficult. So, and I wish I would have done that, you know, like at the end of 02 or 01 even, you know, just go somewhere and build two tracks and, you know. And
just really work on it, yeah.
Yeah, I think that would have helped me just to improve for sure.
Also, you know, in 03, that was my first year at Yamaha. You were pretty equal to those guys at the World Rounds when we went to Arnhem and Switzerland. And then, you know, you kind of started off okay. But then when you hurt your back, that took a lot of wind out of your sails.
Yeah, I was doing good. Like, I won Geneva, and I got second in Arnhem in end of 02. And then we started 03. And I did good. I was regularly on the podium that year. I think I made half of the podium. And I was doing actually pretty good before I broke my back. I think I was second in Indy the weekend before. Ricky won, I think. Chad got third. And actually, we had a little argument with Chad because I kind of took him out in a heat race or something.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And the other tunnel, and that was kind of like a little controversy.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't mean to. I hit his front wheel and he crashed. But that weekend, I rode really well. I got second. And the next weekend, I broke my back in Daytona. It was pretty muddy. And in an e-race, I hurt myself, and it took me a while to come back. Actually, I came back for the Nationals on the 450, actually. That was the was my first race on the 450. Yeah, it's, you know, everybody can say whatever they want, but when you get serious injuries, come back, you lose a little bit somewhere. Yeah.
How cool was that when you chased McGrath down at Phoenix and passed him and won the race in 01? 01 or 00?
It was 2000.
2000. How cool was that for you? Was that just like the ultimate?
Yeah, that was great. I think, the week before I won my first one in San Diego. And, you know, all short and won. You know,
yeah. Everybody was like saying, well, McGrath didn't get the start, so he couldn't run.
Yeah, and then the following week they say, oh, Randy Lawrence did not tell McGrath I was coming. You know, so I thought that was pretty funny. But, it was a great race. I rode good, you know, and I was, but for me, it was almost normal back in the day. It was weird because we worked so hard, and my parents made so much sacrifices for me to race in Europe, you know, and go to the GPs. We did not have money. It was really difficult. And then we worked so hard when we got the deal with Yamaha, and I was doing good, and you know, it was like my parents were proud, but they were almost like, we're doing this, and you know,
it wasn't that big of a deal that you just chased down the king and won.
Yeah, it's I'm sure, but my dad was always, you know, really tough with me, and he never showed and never really congratulated me. You know, when I was doing great stuff, you know, he was always making me feel like he was normal. So I think that was cool. Sometimes I would have wanted him to be a little more enthusiastic about my wins, you know. But I did not think he wanted me to feel that way because he wanted me to still work, you know. But yeah, 2000 was cool. You know, I was out of nowhere, and with the three-digit number, I went races. Nobody really knew me. You know, only the people that were following. You know, but half of the people in the stadium said, well, "Who the hell is that?" You know?
Oh yeah, no, for sure. I remember
and
that.
In Phoenix, like I knew, I had people I knew in the stands, and people next to them said they did not even know who I was. You know, and I was chasing MC and like passing him in the last lap, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah, no, for sure. What speaking of the GPs, how many GPs did you win? I used to ask you this.
I won 4, 125, and 3, 250, but I got disqualified at 1 because my bike was too loud.
Too loud afterwards.
Officially, it's 2, yeah. But I actually won 3 and 250.
You do you follow the GPs?
Yeah, I follow the GPs. I follow everything.
Yeah.
I like to check it out.
Except for hockey. You don't really like... You told me one time you didn't like hockey.
No, actually, I've no... Hockey, baseball,
yeah.
Really bad. Even football, I'm not really... I follow the Browns because Erica and Erica's family are fans, but football, I don't really follow. And hockey and baseball, like, I don't know anything.
Now, what do you think about the NPG Ustream debate on the Outdoor Nationals? What's your thoughts on that as a rider?
As a rider, I'm not really sure. There is room for improvement in the Nationals, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It would be great if they were kind of like Supercross, where they were close to a big city, you know, easy to get to, you know, but it seems like... all the best tracks are like in the middle of nowhere, you know.
Right.
And the two-day thing is long, and I don't think the GPs are the best. You know, I think there's good stuff in GPs. There's good stuff here. You know, but I would think there's. I don't know what would be better with Longo, or I don't know what would be better with MPG. I really don't know.
Well, if you were king of the Outdoor Nationals, what would you change?
I would do actually six races, one-off six races,
yep.
First of all. And I would do a one-day program for the top 20. Top 20 only ride on Sundays. So you fly on Saturday, you fly on Monday. Because we go there for two practices of 20 minutes, you know. If they want to do that, the way it is right now, two practices on Saturday, two practices on Sunday are timed. I will do only one of each. I will do one...
free practice or open practice?
One free practice on Saturday, one time practice, and then that time practice gives you the gate pick. So you don't have to, in the morning on Sunday, you don't have to go wide open in the first lap because the track is flat to do a lap time to get a good pick on the gate for the two models, you know. So I would do time practice on Saturday, the second one that works for the gate pick for both models, and then in the morning only a warm up of 20 minutes, only one.
That's it.
Two.
One practice.
One practice and then two models. Actually, in the U.S., everybody thinks, oh, if you, the gate pick,
mm-hmm.
I think it's fair to have a gate pick with lap times. I read and I hear a lot of people say, oh, it's not good. We need, if you win Moto 1, you need to have first pick Moto 2, you know? But what if you break, you know, like, you have, like, the third fastest lap and you have a problem in Moto 1, you have to have 40th pick? I think that's not fair.
No, and also,
I think the top speed of the riders, it's easy to do one lap fast, you know? Like, it shows the level, and I think it's pretty fair to use the lap time for both races. I think that's good. But the way it is right now, you basically have to do four practices and go wide open four times, you know, because the two practices, you know, counts, you know.
Yeah,
so,
I don't know why you guys, like, and I told Timmy the same thing. Why does he bother showing up on Saturday? You know, James wasn't doing it, and he was taking a lot of heat on the internet. But, I mean, guys like you and Ferry have been riding these tracks forever. You don't need to go there on Saturday, but it's the whole thing about, well, if I don't go, then another guy will get an advantage on me, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And the way it is, you can't do it because the way it is, in the morning on Sundays, you have two practices. They time practice, and they take the best out of the two. You never know if the track is awesome in first practice. You did not practice the day before. You don't really know. They change a few turns, a few jumps. And the other guy, they go wide open on a flat track, and they get a great pick for both motos. And you showed up on Sunday morning. You don't really know.
Yep.
It takes you three laps to get going, or four laps, and you get only the 10th pick, and it's Washugo, and you're on the outside and on the start for two motos, and you're screwed. I think there's room for improvement for the qualification. But, you know, I like the Nationals.
Well, that's good that you got that in there, so we all know that you do like the Nationals.
Yeah, I like the Nationals. They're good. They scatter by the dust too much. That's one of the problems. I think they overwater everywhere too much. They water in between motos too much. That's not fun, because after two laps, everybody is brown, you know, and it's really not fun. We could get away without watering in between motos that much, you know. But, you know, it's everybody has their opinion, and it's difficult to make it perfect.
But you did have a Supercross-only contract at one point.
Yes, I did, because, you know.
Yeah, I know, I understand. Okay, well, what about the internet? We're wrapping this up here, the Racer X Canada podcast. What about the internet, man? You're on it quite a bit. You're a very active poster on the different moto boards. What do you think about the internet? Obviously, you're a fan of it, but it's bit you a few times.
Yeah, like a few years ago. You know, you don't want to react and overreact about something on the internet. You know. Now, if somebody say I suck, yeah, it's great. You know, I make fun of myself and I take it that way. It's difficult that everybody likes you and everybody thinks you're cool, you know. It's okay, I'm French, I'm getting bald, you know, I'm not cool anymore. but the thing is, you know, the internet is cool, you know. Like, I think everybody should be, you know, thankful about the internet. You know, all the free stuff. You pay $20 a month or $40 a month, and you get all this cool stuff about our sport. You have videos, news, photos. You listen to Jim Ollie. There's so much stuff for free. You know, you have videos on YouTube. It's crazy. And then, you know, there's few riders that interact online, you know. I think that's cool with the fans. You don't see, like, basketball player do that, you know. They don't go on forums and talk, you know. I think that's kind of cool. And plus, you know, I'm a fan of the sport, you know. There's always cool videos from the 80s and the 90s, you know. I'm a big fan of those years, you know. I think it's great. As a fan of the sport, you know, I love the internet, because you can learn so much and you can find some cool photos and videos.
I've never seen anybody be such a quick linker like you, like on Instant Messenger. I don't know how you do that so fast. You must have the fastest.
Yeah, you always ask me questions and ask me stuff, and I always send you the right link.
Yeah, you're on it, I gotta say, for sure. All right, well, cool. Well, thanks for doing this, Stevie. I appreciate it. I know, you know, we were teammates for 3 years, so I'm just trying to get you some publicity for leaving.
Hey, we forgot to talk about one thing.
What's that?
When you forgot to tie my front caliper?
Yeah. I was hoping maybe to try to get away from that. Yeah, I apologize again for that. In case anybody doesn't understand or doesn't know what we're talking about, I was DV's mechanic a few times at the track, and we were testing forks, and probably Villeman was yelling at me or making fun of me, and I accidentally forgot to tighten the caliper bolts on his front brake, and he went out, and they fell off, caught in his front wheel, and he crashed. Real slow speed crash. But, you know, luckily you weren't like Reed. Remember how he jumps on the track and jumps a triple?
Yeah, Reedy was crazy. Like, with cold bike and going wide open on the track. I always try to see especially when they changed jetting back in the day on the 250, if it was not bogging or stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I always took a couple of laps to get going and check the bike first. And
it's a good thing I did that
one day, because on that little flat turn, you know,
yeah.
My front wheel locked, and I was on the ground.
I felt really bad. I
yeah, but that was funny. But that was funny. That was you, because it seems like you were an easy target with me and Reedy always kind of joking with you. So
yeah, no, you know, you took it in a good way. I gotta say, for a guy who could have died, you took it pretty good.
Okay, you know.
You just got to ask Ferry. Every time he got on his bike, he probably just said a little prayer to himself.
I can't believe, seriously, I can't believe how he brought you to Yama. That was crazy.
Thanks a lot. Well, you know, Jimmy didn't want to hire me. Jimmy told him, no, I don't want to hire that guy. And he really got me that job. He insisted on having my quality because he knew from Summercross, when we won Summercross, that I
had. And you beat Jeremy McGrath, right?
Yeah, and we beat McGrath, and he knew that I had what it took.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, DV. Well, thanks very much for doing this, and hopefully I didn't hold you up in your poker game too much.
Yeah, I think I blinded out. They took all my blinds and lost all my money.
Oh, geez. Sorry, bud. Well, I'll see you this weekend.
All right, see you there. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And that's a wrap with DV12.com on this edition of the RacerX Canada podcast. Always brought to you by Shift Racing. Hope you enjoyed it. I wish I had more time with DV. He's a pretty interesting guy. But for everything I read, half hour of 40 minutes is about the most that anybody can pay attention in this Y2K world that we live in. So stay tuned next week, where I hope to bring you another exciting installment of the RacerX Canada podcast.